You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast.
The Sick Podcast.
With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the
sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoins, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne. Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Tout année pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs. John, you found the dogs. He found the dogs.
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
It's the Sick Podcast. I'm Marinaro. I'm in on this Friday, April 19, even though I'm usually not in on Fridays, but today is a special occasion because it's the day of the Barry F. Lorenzetti Foundation with the Foundation Cup that took place earlier this morning at the Bell Center. As a matter of fact, a lot of former NHLers, a lot of members of the artistic world, celebrities, a lot of people were there. It was a lot of fun raising money towards mental health and towards autism. I can tell you, $150,000 were raised for these two fantastic and very worthy causes. The Sick Podcast is brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different, and also brewed in Quebec and a winner of a dozen international awards. It's brought to you by Labitta TB, offering quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. Labitta TB, embrace your true nature. I am live at Da Vinci Restaurant. When I say live, it's actually afternoon right now. It's about 1:30 in the afternoon where this is being taped to be played live later tonight at 10 p.m. Of course, thank you all for watching on YouTube. Thank you all for watching on Facebook. And thank you all for watching on Twitter. Among those who are participating earlier today at the Bell Center and playing a game of hockey, let me tell you, he could still skate. And someone said to me, I think Paul Byron could still play in the National Hockey League. It's my pleasure to welcome to the Sick Podcast, former Montreal Canadian. Let's bring him in. Paul, take a seat. Paul Byron, how are you?
Doing well, thanks, Tony. How are you?
Very, very good, Paul. First off, congratulations on your career. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. Throughout your entire career, so much admiration for not only anyone who makes it to play pro sports, but a small guy like yourself. I know you heard this. I'm sure there weren't too many people that bet on you. I'm sure you heard all your life that you were too small and weren't going to make it. And for me, the one thing I've noticed in all the sports is when smaller athletes end up making it, they have a force of mental toughness and a force of character that probably others don't have because they have to fight that much more.
Yeah, I think so. Growing up as a kid, if you would have told me, hey, you're going to play 500 games in the NHL, I probably wouldn't have believed you. Even at 16, 17, that dream just seemed so far away. But kind of just took it one year at a time. I love hockey. I love the game. I love pushing myself. And, you know, my competitive nature just kind of grew and developed. And I was really lucky to have the right people at the right time believe in me. And getting to Gatineau with Ben Grew, you know, he grew me to be an NHLer.
Today, 2024, easier or harder for a player of your size to make it to the National Hockey League?
Much easier. Much easier. Just the way the game's played, the spacing, not having the hooking, the holding. You know, you look at teams now, I think the league's actually gone smaller than it was maybe 20 years ago, but you see it in the game now. It's so fast. It's so skilled. Everyone can skate. Everyone can shoot. There's fourth-line players that are just really good hockey players nowadays. So it's great to see. The quality of hockey is amazing.
I can't wait to talk to you about the work that you do with the Montreal Canadiens and player development. I know you're having fun with that, but before I do, today's a special cause, of course, the Barry F. Lorenzetti Foundation. Talk to us about how many of these fundraisers that you take part in and how much fun it is for you to still get back on the ice and see some of the guys.
Yeah, it's my first one in hockey. Getting back on the ice, a lot of fun. It's a great sport. I love still putting on the skates. Not quite skating like I used to. I know it's hard to believe, but I love doing it. I've done a lot of golf events, charity stuff in the past, and to be able to give your time for such a great cause, help people out, you know, it's a pretty rewarding feeling, kind of using your platform, your status to help, you know, raise money is a great, great cause. And it's really good to see the face people make when they see you. You get to make a pass to them on the ice. It's a pretty rewarding feeling.
You were drafted by the Buffalo Sabres, went on to Calgary, picked up by the Montreal Canadiens on waivers. You had a chance to be with several organizations. Montreal is home for you.
Yep.
Talk to me about how good Montreal was for your career and still is for you today.
I mean, to think even nowadays, put on that sweater, you know, the first time still gives me goosebumps thinking about it. It was incredible for me, my family, my wife's French Canadian. Coming home from Alberta, it was a blessing. I was on the verge of maybe signing in Europe. I had good offers to go and play in Geneva. I was very, very close to signing a deal in Russia to play in CSKA in Moscow. And I just kind of stuck with it, believed in myself. But that day that the phone rang and, hey, you're going to Montreal, it was something special. And I always thought I'd go home to Ottawa and go back home, see my family and friends. But as we've been here 8-9 years, it's home now. We're rooted. My kids have friends, and I still get to work with the team, and it's really a dream come true. I couldn't ask for any more.
Talk to us about your health. We know that your career ended probably sooner than you would have wanted to. There was an accumulation of injuries. What actually stopped you out of all the injuries you had? What were you feeling? What stopped you from doing, continuing to do what you love?
Yeah, I had my hip fixed right after the playoff run. I got to a point where I could barely even walk after a hockey game. So I got my hip fixed, and it made a big difference. And that next year was pretty challenging. I felt like I had to come back. I was a leader on the team. Morale was pretty low. I felt like maybe I rushed back a little too early, and I didn't build up the kind of strength and capacity I probably needed to be an NHLer. But I kind of just figured I'd pick up on the go and just get better. And, you know, I'll just keep playing forever like I've always done. And I tore the three muscles off the pubic bone on the right side. And since that point, I never really got better. I went and saw doctors, specialists, imaging everywhere, MRIs, CT scans, like you name it, I've done it. And even to this day, it's never felt like it's healed properly. And, you know, I'll go out there today and just kind of cruise around. I might be sore for a couple of days after that. And the wear and tear it takes to play in the NHL, the grind, the workout, the training, the intensity. Unfortunately, I just wasn't able to do it anymore. And that's where you have to respect what people do at this level to play. It takes an enormous amount of energy, time. And if you don't have your health, you know, you can't be an effective player anymore.
You know, obviously it's a good life because that's what you wanted to do and you did it. But you also talked about how hard a life it is and how disciplined a lifestyle you have to have. Can you put it into context? Because a lot of people think that it's all fun and games and it's all roses being a professional athlete.
Yeah.
That, you know, they practice a couple of hours a day or they get to play when they're not practicing and they got a lot of free time and they got long summers. And talk to me about the day to day and the fact that it's basically 12 months a year.
Yeah. Everything you do makes a difference on the ice. So it starts in your morning, right? You get a good sleep, how you feel, you know, your how you wake up, if you have energy, are you tired, are you fatigued, what you eat, what you put into your body, your nutrition, your workout, your gym, building that intensity, that workload, having specific goals, targets to get stronger, faster. You know, as I grew in my career, as I started to really focus on powerlifting and explosion, like I got faster, quicker. So building that kind of program, then you go home. Well, what do you do with your free time? Do you just go home, sit on the computer? No, like you got to stay active. You got to keep your mind sharp. You got to watch video, watch film, watch your clips. And then on game days, you know, you're at the rink in the morning, you go home, take a quick nap and you're back at the rink at 3:30. You just live at the rink. It's everything. It's your lifestyle. The season ends. You might take a couple weeks off, but then you restart again. You know, your friends are going to bars, this and that, but you got a job to do. You got to train. You got to work out. You're an athlete. You got to Are you on the bubble? Are you trying to get in the NHL? Are you an American League guy? Are you established and you're trying to get higher in the lineup? Are you just trying to keep your job? You know, it never ends. You live kind of day to day as a hockey player, and you can't really focus too far into the future. You just kind of focus on tomorrow. And it's definitely been a challenge for me last year and this year, is just kind of getting out of that and being a normal person again. But it's something I miss. Once you start it, it's everything. It's your life. It's not just a game.
We saw you the other night in the Loge on the final home game of the season, of course, versus the Red Wings, with Carey Price sitting next to you. We haven't heard much from Carey. Obviously, he hasn't been too much in the media. I know you have a real good relationship, always did, and probably always will. For the benefit of the listeners, those watching, those listening, how's he doing?
He's doing really well. He looks really healthy, really happy. You know, he wants to make a presence in Montreal. He loves coming to the games. He loved being there the other night. But, you know, mentally, he's in a really good headspace. He looks very healthy. And, you know, being in Montreal, it's just hard as, you know, being him. You know, you go to the grocery store, you go to the golf course. It's like every single place he goes, everyone knows who he is. And it's a big weight he wears on his shoulders. So the fact that he can go home, go to Kelowna, just kind of live a normal life and unwind a bit is, you know, it's big for him.
I'll keep you for one or two more. We have a long list of people that we want to talk to. But for me, I'm having a lot of fun talking to you. I actually wish this could go on forever, but. You know, you talked about your injuries and you would have liked to have played longer. And we talked about the fact you're not a big guy. And I think of Nick Suzuki's 5'11", best season of his career under Marty St. Louis. Cole Caulfield's probably 5'8", best season of his career under Marty St. Louis. Alex Newhook, 5'11", best season of his career under Marty St. Louis. It's too bad Paul Byron never played under Marty St. Louis, because I just have a feeling, as useful as you were as a player, I think you could have thrived under him. You get that feeling? Or?
I think so, too. I love Marty. I love his thinking, his mind, what he brings to the team. You know, I was fortunate. I had some great coaches in my career, but not able to have played with Marty and the admiration I had for him as a player and what he did and what I see he does day to day. I'm a little bit jealous, I'm not going to lie. I see all these guys and I'm super happy for them. You know, we see what's in the pipeline. We saw Lane the other night. We saw Logan, how dynamic those players are, what they can do to shape a team. And I'm very fortunate to be in the organization still, because I think our future is very bright and, you know, the troops are coming. I don't think it's going to be too long.
Awesome. Player development. Who have you had a chance to work with in the past year?
I've worked with Owen Beck, Philip Massar. Did a little bit of work with Cedric Guidon. Emil Heinemann. His year was a little bit rocky at the start. He went through some head stuff. You know, that's always hard. It's challenging.
He's got a good shot.
He's got a great shot. Big guy. Different than what we have on the team currently right now. I think there's definitely a spot for that kind of player on any team. And other than that, I do a lot of on-ice development, a lot of rehab skates. So the team will go on the road, and guys that have injuries are coming back. They'll kind of call me in and do the skating there. So pretty involved kind of all over the place. I don't do as much travel as Frankie and Rob to go visit guys, but I'm pretty busy with my son, his hockey, his team. And, you know, communication now is so easy with FaceTime and text. You know, I keep a good tap on my players, and I'm very excited to get some guys in Laval and actually get to work one-on-one with them in person.
Is it safe to say that some of these players that you talked about, you work a lot on skating with them or other?
It depends. I don't really do much skating work with them. Skating is kind of unique. You can't really build a base of skating over one or two practices. It's something that it's probably more of a summertime project, I'd say, and you know, we'll see how the summer goes with me, Adam, and Scott, how we want to divvy up our time and who does what. But sometimes it's just kind of understanding what to do on the ice, where to go, how to support. You know, as a fast player, the hardest thing for me sometimes was skating out of position a lot. And I'd always want to skate. But sometimes you have to slow down. And then when you get the puck, that's when you move fast. And sometimes guys are in a rush to speed up, but they need to stay in support lanes and support their defense better or support their center better. And then once you get the puck, now is when you use their speed. And so I did a lot of work with that with the guys.
Two more questions. One on Owen Beck, a second-round pick by the Montreal Canadiens a couple of years ago. If I'm not mistaken, I think 33rd in the draft. Was the best faceoff guy in the OHL the year of his draft year. What can you tell us about his game and how far away you think he is?
It's hard to say how far away he is. I really like his game. He plays a pro-style game. Like you said, he's a very, very strong guy. He's great on faceoffs. He skates really well. He's hard. He's physical. I have lots of clips of him, like, kind of going to corners and crushing guys. So there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be a great pro player. Ultimately, it's kind of up to him how he does next year in Laval and what opportunity arises for him in Montreal. And you know, I'm super excited. I think what we have with Kirby, what we have with Nick, he brings something different, which is what you need on the team. And the future is very bright for him. Great young man.
Last question, and we're going to get to former Quebec Nordique coach Michel Bergeron of TVA Sport in just 1 minute. But you brought up Lane Hutson's name, and I saw you smile.
Oh, yeah.
Michel Bergeron told me that it's a player that makes him smile too. Kind of like your stature, but playing defense and the way he dangles. How much does he excite you?
A lot. I mean, how could you not be excited watching his two games against Detroit, right? What he did at BU, you know, there's always concerns. Oh, he's a small guy, this and that. And then he gets the puck and the control. And you saw NHL guys, how they weren't sure how to attack him. He's so fast. He's so quick. He's great on his edges. He played a great game defensively. I thought he did very well. You know, you could tell the system, the structure, it's going to take some time to adapt to that. But, you know, the good stick, good angling, his control, the pace, it felt like he controlled the game. And it's a very, very exciting player. He's very dynamic. And as you see, the great teams in the league have great defense. If the puck can get out of your zone, in the attacking zone, you're going to spend more time with the puck. And that's something that I think we're all excited about.
Paul, awesome stuff. Thank you for your time. Thank you for making the time for me here. On behalf of everyone who's watching, everyone's listening in Montreal, throughout the entire province, Habs fans around the world, thank you so much for killing Toronto in the playoffs. That goal was fantastic.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Thanks again. All right, there you have it. Paul
Byron. Good luck
to your son. All right, thank you. I appreciate it. He's a good man. He really is a good man. From one good man to another, let's bring him in right now. He's a man they call Le Tigre, Michel Bergeron. It's funny because at the hockey game that took place earlier today for the Foundation Cup, there were a couple of coaches. Michel Bergeron was coaching with former NHLer Maxime Talbot. And on the other side, on the other bench, we had Chris Nyland with Daniel Sauvageau. Chris Nyland's team got the better of Michel Bergeron's team earlier today at the Bell Center. But Michel said to me 40 years later, the referee still can't give me a break.
Well, I got to give the credit to Chris. His team was ready, but I don't know who makes the draft. When I saw their team with Paul Byron and Pascal Dupuis, I'm telling you, Tony, Pascal Dupuis can play again.
Oh, yeah?
Did you see the way he's skating, the way he handles the puck, the way he shoots the puck?
It was easy for him.
Oh, my God. I know he's working for Shawinigan again.
Yeah.
He owns the team.
Yeah.
And now...
Alexandre Daigle was on the other team, too.
Alexandre was there also. Yeah. We were good on defense with Quintal, Dandenault,
Brisebois,
Sévigné in the net. But we were like the Canadian. We were missing talent up there, up front.
The opposition also had Bruno Gervais and Francis Bouillon on defense, too. So they were a pretty stacked team.
Hey, Tony, I know that, but I told the management, I want to make the draft next year.
You'll be back next year, eh? Barry Lorenzetti does such amazing stuff in the community. The fact that you're here today to be a part of it, to support him as well, the Foundation Cup, raising money to go towards mental health and towards autism. What's your connection with Barry and
Louis Morissette.
And Louis Morissette, of course.
Louis Morissette and Vero, they're doing fantastic for the health, for the
autism,
for the kids who needs help.
Was it them that reached out to you?
Yeah.
It was them that reached out. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't miss a day like this, you know, because, okay, it's funny because we go back in our years, and but these foundations are doing so well.
Yeah.
So we need them.
Michelle, I'm going to tell you something I told you before, so now I'm sounding redundant, but I told you off camera, now I'm going to tell you on camera. For me, you have that it factor. You have something that other people don't have. To think in the 80s, you were persona non grata in the city of Montreal. As a matter of fact, you were hated. You were hated, right? You were the coach of the dreaded Quebec Nordiques, not only were you the coach, you were the one who would stand up on the bench. You were the one who would go crazy. You were the one who would have the press conference and say, Tommy, I'm not going crazy. Maybe I'm going to have a heart attack or something. Remember when you used to say that? When the goal got called off to Alain Côté and all that stuff and the way that game turned like that. And then you actually also you come to Montreal. You beat the Canadiens on an overtime goal. I believe it was Peter Stastny, if memory serves me well.
85.
In 1985. And so you were hated. 40 years later, you're loved in this city. It's like you're one of it's you're loved more than a former Montreal Canadian was almost, you know.
Well,
you feel that though. You feel
I feel that, Tony.
What does it mean to you to have that love when you were so hated 40 years ago?
It's funny because I was a great fan of the Canadian at the time. You know, at my age, I remember I've seen the Maurice Richard. Jean Béliveau, Henri Richard, Doug Harvey, Don Marshall, you know.
So you wanted to coach the Canadians then?
I wanted to coach the Canadians after my years in the Quebec. But, you know,
why do you think it didn't happen? Do you think it didn't happen because you were associated with Quebec and the fan base?
No, I remember I met Serge Chabot, who was a manager at the time. And it was between me and Jacques Demers, 93. And they chose Jacques Demers because they told me the doctor said because I had a heart attack before.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was not the proper thing to do to hire Bergeron.
You think it was an excuse?
Maybe, but I don't know. I don't know. But Jacques, I keep saying Serge Savard at the time made the right decision. They won the cup.
Oh, yeah.
And Jacques Demers was... before that, Jacques, I was hired in Quebec when Jacques got fired. Remember the first year in the National Hockey League, Quebec was Jacques Demers was the coach.
Yeah.
And after the first year, he got fired. And I was coming there, and Jacques was always beside me. Yeah. He didn't coach, but
you went on to coach the New York Rangers after Quebec, of course. You took over Madison Square Garden and the Big Apple.
Yeah.
They embraced you, but unfortunately...
You know what? You know what? When they came to me and said, Bergie, you're... because at the time, Billy Martin was coaching the Yankees. And he says, the assistant of the Phil Esposito at the time says, hey, Bergie, you're a real New Yorker. You should come in New York. I said, well, and I was coaching Quebec for 7 years, and maybe it was time for me to move on. You know, after 7 years, you coach the same team, the same players. I had the Stastnys, Hunter, Goulet, Pema. Maybe it was time for me to move to New York.
You know what? Growing up cheering for the Canadians, I hated Michel Bergeron once upon a time, too. But I'll tell you the moment I fell in love with you. When you gave a chance to my childhood idol, Guy Lafleur.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget that. You had the camp, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was in Trois-Rivières, the camp for the Rangers.
Trois-Rivières.
When you brought in Guy Lafleur and you gave Guy Lafleur a chance after being forced into retirement, way too early before he wanted to, playing a style of hockey under Jacques Lemaire that he did not want to play. When you gave him that chance, for me...
I never forget that. When... Guy called me in New York. He says, his agent told me Guy wants to come back. And I've heard that Guy was playing in the Ligue de Garage, and he was in great shape. He was flying on the ice. And I told Phyllis Pusto at the time, I said, hey, I just got a call. Flower wants to come back. He says, hey, call him. Tell him to come in New York. And I remember I picked him up at the airport. And Guy was, you know, Guy, Flower, was in great shape.
Wow, amazing.
He says, well, and he came to to the training camp in Trois-Rivières. He didn't have a contract. When you're talking about pressure, he didn't have a contract. And he came to the camp in Trois-Rivières. He scored the first goal against John Van Beesbrouck. Wow. I think John opened his leg. Let the coach, and he signed the contract, and that that's where I remember the most about Guy. He was a great player. Everybody knows that. But I knew the man.
He wasn't the best player.
No.
But for me, he was the best. Does that make sense
all
to you?
All around, he was the best.
But he wasn't.
Yeah.
And I know in my heart he wasn't.
Yeah.
Or I know in my head that he wasn't, but in my heart he was.
Yeah.
Guy Lafleur didn't have the career that Wayne Gretzky had.
I'm
going to
tell you a story about Guy. I told him when he signed the contract with the Rangers, I said, maybe, well, you're 37 now. Maybe you won't play every game. And I do that in Minnesota. I decide that game, Guy doesn't play. So, like, every game, Guy was there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I went to the ring. I said, hey, Guy, tonight you're not playing. He says, Bergie, you can't do that. I play my best game in Minnesota. I said, yeah. I told him, I said, Guy, you play your best game everywhere because you were the best. And that night, he didn't play, but he was fantastic. And one night he called me in New York, says, we should go out with our wife for dinner. I said, I can't go to Guy, because I got to see watch the game between the Islanders and the Devils. He said, don't look at this game, this boring game.
Amazing stories. I never get enough of the stories of Guy Lafleur, my childhood. I don't listen. Before we let you go, Barry Larenzetti is going to drop by here in about a minute. Two players that I really want to – I know you're high on them, but I want to have the people watching and listening an idea of how high you are on them. Juraj Slafkovský.
Wow. I can't see – I see Tellement is going to be good in the – maybe next year, maybe, because he's only playing. You know, he doesn't have to learn. He knows the game. He knows where to go. You know, since what I like about him, let him play and coach him after. Don't coach him before. Just let him play. He's gonna learn everything. He's so good. And he looks.
Who does he remind you of?
Well, I got a few names.
Tell me.
Marianosa.
Marianosa is a Hall of Famer.
And the one who I like the most is Mark Messier. But not tougher like Messier, because Messier was mean. He was cross-checking the guy behind. But I don't think Slav will be like this. But the way he's skating, the way he handles the puck, the way he shoots, Mark Messier looks. He reminds me. Mark Messier without the toughness.
You're talking about a top 10 player in the history of the National Hockey League on everyone's list.
He's going to be a top player. He's going to be, I think, the best player, the best forward, the Montreal Canadiens. That's my opinion.
Look, I'll leave you with this on Slafkovský. Two players in the history of the Montreal Canadiens at age 20 had a season of 20 goals or more and 50 points or more. The first one was Guy Lafleur. The second one is Juraj Slafkovský.
Yeah.
But Pretty good company.
Guy Lafleur was playing on the fourth line at the time. He didn't play regularly.
No, the first 3 years, Scotty didn't play him.
No. But no.
Secondly, and then I'll let you go. Lane Hutson. The sample size is not big. It's two games in the National Hockey League, but...
I love him.
You love him?
I love him. Let him play. Don't tell me he's going to make some turnover. He's going to lose the puck somewhere. Not that. Let him play. You know, because, like Madison this year, he's minus 24. But he's on the ice when they pull out the goalie. He's minus 12 or 13 when the Canadian... pull out the goalie.
Because they're trying to get a goal, so he's on the ice to try and get that goal.
That's right. Let him play.
For a guy who has as much experience behind the bench as you did, and you have a wealth of knowledge to offer, Last question, Barry Lorenzetti will come in. If there's one piece of advice you can give Martin Saint-Louis, what would it be? One piece.
Well, be a little tougher. When they like the last game of the year, when Anderson didn't show up, don't.
You get the feeling, though, the next year that the honeymoon will be over with him and some of the players?
I hope so. I hope so, man. See, like this
what
year.
What would you have done with Josh Anderson, getting paid $5.5 million
a year?
They
should, they should take it off for a couple of games just to make an example to the young players. You know, you got to be, like Martin said a lot of time, I got to be fair. So be fair with the kids, but be fair with the veteran. If you don't want to play, you don't play. That's it.
We are live at Da Vinci Restaurant. Well, live, I'm saying this, is just past 2 o'clock in the afternoon here at Da Vinci Restaurant on Bishop Street. And I took you away from your fantastic lunch for a few minutes. So go back.
Shoot my English. I am.
Your English is.
I'm losing it.
English.
I was not good that much, but I'm losing it.
Your English is better than my French, and I'm making a lot of money in French. So I think you can make a lot of money in English.
I watch you with JC, and you're very good.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup, Michel.
Thank you, Tony. Anytime.
T'es un de mes favoris. He was a great coach, and he's a great man. And everyone, I never met anyone who met Michel Bergeron that didn't say that he's a great man.
Not there in the 80s, though.
Not in the 80s, but 40 years later, he is. Okay. Let's say goodbye to Michel. Merci beaucoup, Michel. Without further ado, let's bring him in. He is the man of the hour. He's why we are here today at Da Vinci Restaurant, and he's why we were at the Bell Center earlier this morning. He is none other than Barry Lorenzetti. Barry, good afternoon.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate the invitation. I appreciate being here. I appreciate being at the Bell Center earlier this morning. When Susan gave me a call to see if I could come down and cover the event, I was beyond ecstatic. Much respect to you and everything you've done and everything you continue to do. I definitely know who you are, but we'll talk about the Foundation Cup in a minute. I know you don't like talking about yourself, but you're going to have to, because some people watching, listening, probably don't know who Barry Lorenzetti is. Maybe they've been living under a rock for the last couple of years, but what can you a little bit about yourself? And,
thanks so much, and it's a pleasure to be here. Really appreciate the invitation, and thank you so much for your support today. I don't know if it's my real life or whatever, but I'm a businessman in Montreal, chairman and founder of BFL Canada, which is the largest independently held financial service team in Canada, founded in 87, and a company that's done extremely well because of its employees and the commitment that we have from our staff and the resources that we have. We have offices across Canada. And through a joint venture with a rather large privately held firm, we are represented in over 125, 130 countries worldwide. What else can I tell you on the business side?
You could tell me that you love music and you're a great musician, because I got a call.
I'm not a great musician, but I
got a call while the game was going on this morning.
Okay.
At the Bell Center, I got a call from a very good personal friend of mine. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm at the Foundation Cup that Barry Lorenzetti is hosting here. And he said, he loves to sing and he loves to play. And he's an amazing musician.
Well, you're being very kind.
That call came from my buddy, Mario Charpentier.
Oh, my, Mario. Yeah. One of the best, most respected lawyers around. And, you know, Mario is a great musician himself, a great pianist. And I had the pleasure at one of our galas, because our family has a foundation, as you know, which supports mental health. And we've had this foundation running for 8 years. And about 6 years ago, we decided that we would have an annual gala. And we brought folks like Mario, wannabe professional musicians, but, you know, decided to go a different venture. And some doctors, some lawyers, and we decided that we would put together sort of like a cabaret to raise funds for our foundation. And I'm pleased to say that it's growing extremely well. I like to get up, do some Stones, some Beatles, some Elton John, and do stuff like this. It's fun. We have a ball. Our musical director, Denny, is very astute. He's very demanding. So you have to be pretty good before you get on stage. And last year, you know, we raised over $500,000. And we've raised at least that for our foundation. We have it at Maison Principale, sold out. And it's actually sold out
now. It's
already.
Proceeds going towards mental health,
mental
correct?
Health, absolutely. Mental health, veterans. And, you know,
which is a cause near and dear to my heart as well. Once upon a time, I was president of Mindstrong, the committee to raise money for mental health for the Jewish General Hospital's mm-hmm. Department of mm-hmm. Psychiatry. I believe raised about $7 million in 4 years while I was there because of the amazing team behind
me.
Nothing
we
to
should
do
get,
with myself.
We should get you on our staff. Nothing, to do, with, on our board.
Nothing to do with myself. It's an amazing committee yep. that was behind me. The Foundation Cup, how did this all come about?
Oh, boy, how did this come about? You know, I guess BFL Canada, my firm, supported Louis and Vero with their foundation last year and raised some good funds for them. And I had the thought that wouldn't it be interesting if we could rent ice at the Bell Center and maybe change the mission a little bit to have our foundation host an event such as this every year and have a trophy like the Foundation Cup where we would go to our folks, our sponsors, our donors, choose a foundation of choice to support every year as well. But then just simply look, raise the capital and split it down the middle and not only raise some capital for our foundation, but help another foundation with a serious cause, which is autism and what Louis's trying to do with building homes. And I think it's just a magnificent. So when we had the concept and the idea, and since Louis was involved last year, it was an easy thing for me to reach out to Louis and say, you know, why don't we do this? And, you know, we've become pretty good pals on the way. And both, you know, I think what's important as well, you know, bringing the Anglophone, the Francophone community together for a change, which I think is great, showing that, you know, we can work together.
Yeah.
If we put all of the other stuff aside and kind of work together and imagine if we can do this more often as equal partners in Quebec, how much more prosperous, how much more we could do as a province and more particularly as a city, especially Montreal, which needs it.
No wiser words have been spoken, I think, in the last couple of years in this province. He's Barry Lorenzetti. $150,000 were raised today.
Yep. Net.
Going towards mental health and going towards Louis Barisette and Vero's foundation, which is their cause behind it is autism, of course. Amazing. So this is something that I would imagine is something that you'd like to see continue, the Foundation Cup? Or
yeah.
I mean, are you already looking towards next year? Is there something else you're thinking about?
You know, entrepreneurs look ahead all the time, right? I mean, we're looking towards next year, always looking to improve it. It was interesting today when I was talking to some of our donors today, the Joe Broccolini family, the National Bank, of course, is here. Max Menard, who runs Fiera Capital. You know, it's great when you do something like this and folks, when you're having lunch afterwards around the table, come up to you and say, hey, we want to do this again. We want to support you again. And, you know, I know so-and-so would love to be part of this. So maybe this can grow. And maybe next year we raise more funds. But, you know, to see the pros out there and how generous they are and how of their time. And how well-serving, you know, I was...
I'd like to just give out a couple of names, by the way. Yep. Pascal Dupuis played in today's game. Francis Bouillon played in today's game. Bruno Gervais played in today's game. Alexandre Degg played in today's game. Mathieu Dandeneau, Stéphane Quintal, Patrice Brisebois, Pierre-Marc Bouchard. I mean, there was a lot of former NHLers that played in today's game. There was a lot of talent out there.
And I owe a lot to Max Talbot. You know, Max brought all of these folks to the table, and he said, you know, they didn't hesitate when it's a good cause. And listen, to have Chris Nylon behind the bench and Michel Bergeron on the other side, that was quite entertaining as well. And look, I think it was a great day. Everybody had a great time. I just wish that Jonathan Goldblum could have put the puck in the net. We gave him about six opportunities. The pros passed the puck to him, and he missed six times. So, you know, we'll have a little chat later.
Barry Lorenzetti, thank you for everything
you do.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay,
go back to your fantastic lunch at the fantastic Da Vinci restaurant on Bishop Street in downtown Montreal. There you have it. All right. Okay. Max Talbot will join us in a couple of minutes. But first, why don't we bring in a young lady?
She's the ambassador for the foundation.
Brittany Cannell is the ambassador for the foundation. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Barry just told everyone a little bit about himself and the Foundation Cup and everything. What can you, your connection to the event?
Yeah. So I'm a country singer here in Montreal. And I sing for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yes.
Anthems.
As a matter of fact, you sang O Canada earlier today.
And I sang O Canada today. And yeah. I'm also the ambassador for Barry's Foundation. So when they asked me to come sing the anthem this morning, I said, of course, I'll be there.
And awesome.
Yeah. Hit the old stomping ground. So it was good.
All right. So how is it for a country singer singing the anthem? Once you know how to sing, you know how to sing? Or how is it?
You know what? It's tough because everybody knows those lyrics and the pressure is on no matter what, whether it's the Canadian, the U.S. anthem, it's a big job. And
can you put a country twist to the anthem, or you think it would be accepted if you do?
So I've tried a little bit. We have a country night at the Bell Center.
Okay.
And so I invited my guitar player and we got to do a country anthem.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I try to keep it still, you know, down the middle. I don't want to be viral for
I understand
the wrong reasons. So.
What does it mean to you to be ambassador for such a great foundation, such a great cause, such a great event?
It means a lot. And I'm a big fan of Barry. He's somebody I really look up to. He's an inspiration. And I've been able to be a part of the foundation for the last
few years.
He's
a mentor to many.
He's a mentor. Yeah, absolutely. So I get to learn a lot from him, being around him. It's a great family to be a part of. And so when they asked me to be ambassador, it was a no-brainer. I said, absolutely.
I hear you have a new CD.
I do.
All right. Talk to me about it.
I put out a record, my second sophomore record last Friday.
Yeah.
It's called Pink Collar, and it's a woman empowerment anthem kind of album.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about it, and it's been doing well.
So for the past 22 years, I've been doing radio, television, now podcasting, and I love to sing, but according to everyone who listens to me, I'm not very good at it. At age 51, can I learn how to sing?
Absolutely. I'm a like pro singer, pro as far as people that think they can't sing and want to sing. I am all for saying that they can.
So you can't just, you don't have to be born with it, basically. Even if you're a terrible singer, you can learn how to sing.
I think so, because I'll be honest, like I wasn't really born a singer. Like I really worked hard at practicing and learning how to use my vocal cords. And I was more of a writer growing up. I loved to write songs, but I knew that to get those songs heard, I had to sing. So I had to work hard at my singing. So I believe in you that you could do this.
Well, you know what? you could teach me a lot, because I love the anthem and I love your work.
Thank you very
and,
much.
You know what? I'm going to get my hands on the CD
and you.
Support you in any
that.
Way I can.
Thank
All right.
You.
Thank you for stopping
by.
I appreciate it.
There you
have it. Brittany Cannell, who's the ambassador of the Foundation Cup. And of course, she sang the anthem earlier today. Let's bring him in. He is a former Stanley Cup champion. Of course, everyone remembers Game 7, Pittsburgh versus Detroit. Two big goals by Max Talbot and a 2-1 win.
Big fan, Tony.
I don't think so. Big fan, no, I don't think so. You're not a big fan of mine. I'm a big fan of yours. A heart and soul guy when you played. What's your connection to the event exactly? Barry Lorenzetti just stopped by and said he wants to thank you for all the help in gathering all the guys and all the NHLers. How were you able to pull this off?
Just, you know, throughout the career, you know, you make a lot of good friends. Like, the players are all awesome. You know, we're all retired right now, and you want to associate yourself with good causes and solid people, and that's exactly what we've been doing here, you know, trying to help out great foundations, and it's fun for the guys too to be here. So for me, as you know, I try to help the guys and give a couple calls. Hey, can you come up to this event? And it's fun. It's fun to do, and everybody said yes right away.
You weren't playing today. You mentioned that you have a couple of injuries that probably just don't make it possible. You were coaching. How much do you miss the game?
A lot. I was biting my nails there behind the bench. You know, it's not the same. You obviously want to be on the ice. Just got knee surgery. I'll be back. I'll be back next year. I'll try to reclaim the cup because I lost as a coach. But I miss everything about being in the rink. That's what we miss the most, I think, players. Is, you know, I was telling my son, he's 10 years old now, and I'm like, I just wish for your future that you're able to find a job that feels like a game. And that's, you know, his dad did that. His mom, my wife was a figure skater.
Amazing.
So every day you go to the rink and you just, have fun with the boys, and you're 20 guys at the same age about,
yeah,
and you just grow together also, and yeah, you have a common purpose.
Yeah,
common
I don't goal. Go to the rink, but this microphone is my rink, so I know exactly what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
This is my passion. This exactly. is my love, and I told my kids the same thing. Yeah, but, you know, Michel Bergeron was in about 20 minutes ago, all right? And I asked him to tell me one or two Guy Lafleur stories because he was my childhood idol growing yeah. up, right? I love Guy Lafleur, and I mentioned to Michel, I said, you know, I know that Guy Lafleur was not the best player of all time, and, you know, there's Gretzky, and there's Lemieux, and you know, Jagr and Messier and others. But even though my head knows that he wasn't, in my heart, he was.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense to you.
A lot, yeah.
Today, the player I've most loved in the last 20 years is Sidney Crosby. I love Sidney Crosby. I love everything about him. I remember interviewing him when he was like 15 years old or 16 years old playing in Rimouski.
Yep.
You know, everything I heard about him, I just find that the way he carries himself on the ice and off the ice, it's exemplary. For me, based on the hockey that I've watched in my life, which goes back to probably about 1979, 1980, for me, Sidney Crosby is number three all time.
Yeah.
Behind Gretzky and Lemieux. And I know that this opens up a huge can of worms, but there's a big debate. Yeah, but I get it.
You can debate it, but it comes from your heart.
It comes from my heart, so there's no debate.
Yeah.
Tell me a Crosby story. You have many. Yeah. I have one, by the way, before you think of yours. My greatest Crosby story, All-Star Weekend in Montreal.
Yep, 2009.
All the players are gathered at Bonanotte.
Yes.
At one point, I go to the men's room, right? And I got to go. So there's three urinals set up. I'm on the left, Crosby's in the middle, and Ovechkin on the right.
Come on. Sid picked the middle, or you got there late? Who was the first one there? Because you know that when there's three stalls, you never go in the middle first, right?
That's Sid went rule. First.
Okay.
I don't
and he picked the middle.
I don't want to sound stalker. Well, this sounds really bad. Okay? He went first. He went in the middle. I went second. Don't get me wrong. I had to go, but I could have waited. But because Sid was going, I said, this is my chance to get close to Sid.
That's a little creepy.
That's it. That's very creepy. I should have said that. My God, it's on a podcast. And then Ovechkin walked in and he went right on the right. I said, God. Oh, my God, this is my claim to fame, right? I'm on a line with Crosby and Ovechkin.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's these guys' score?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's a good story.
I'm sure you have better stories than that one. No. Give me a Crosby story that probably not too many people know of.
Well, one of the first one came into my mind is I played with Sid. I met Sid when he was 13 years old. We were both our agent was Pat Brisson. So with CAA, and I worked for Pat when I retired for 2 years. I worked for CAA. And all that your draft year, he brings all the guys. And 17 years old, and he brings them to LA, and he has a big camp there. And you know, we all play against each other, guys from around the world. And he brought Sid when he was 13 to that camp. So there's Sid that's 13, all the guys that will be drafted like 16, 17 years old, and there's pros that work out in LA that comes just to be around the guys and show experience and stuff. So Luc Robitaille is on the ice, Chris Chelios on the ice, and that's the first time I saw Sidney Crosby play, and I met him. And at one time, one shift, he just took the puck and went and attacked Chelios, and he shifted one left, right, and he went between his leg, and he just went on the backhand shelf. And you're like, that kid is 13 years old, and Chelios probably was in his prime back then. And he was so pissed off, you know, Chelios in his rage. But that's just how good he was at that age, right? And after that, we played it. Against each other at 16 and in the queue. And you know, when we won the lottery in Pittsburgh, I was already drafted in Pittsburgh. And it was just, okay, we get this kid. We knew he was going to be special. But I remember when he got in, you know, his first year, we had an old team in Pittsburgh. So there was Recky, LeClaire, Mario was still playing, Zygmunt, Palfy, whatever. We have an old team. And Sid would already debate with Recky on the bench sometimes, just about vision, about, you know, oh, you shouldn't do that. And you know, he's 18 years old, and he'd go and talk it. And Rex, you know, it was all in love and everything.
Yeah.
But he was so
imagine
assertive.
The confidence you have to have, the assertiveness. He's a real one. Like,
yes.
C'est vrai. Like, he was born. Man, did his parents do an amazing job with him?
Yes. Oh, amazing. And you look at him now, just the way, because we hear about the story, how great he is and everything, but that's a quarter of all the stories, all the good he does around Pittsburgh, that nobody talks about because he doesn't want it to be public.
Yeah.
Nothing he does is for the cameras, or he doesn't have social media. He always, you know, thought about what's good. And I was in Pittsburgh about 2 months ago. And so we chat after the game and everything.
Please let me know the next time you're going to go there. I'm going to give you my Crosby jersey to have signed.
Okay. Okay. We'll have that signed. But he's like, hey, Max, remember Jim? Jim's father died. I'm like, Jim. He's like, well, it was the guy that took care of the wife's room. And his father passed, unfortunately. But he's like, you know, and he's like, after that, I went to talk to Jim. He's like, Max, he's like, you won't believe when my father passed, who do I see show up at the funeral home? It's Sid's wife, because the Penguins were on the road, but Sid's wife went too. Wow. You know, because it's that. It's community. It's the tightness. And
he's, Sid all about, just, he's all about respect.
He thinks about all these things.
Amazing.
And you walk around Console Energy Center, now it's PPG Paint.
Yeah.
And all the people, the security people, the place, the tickets and everything, it's all the same one that used to work at the Mellon, right? He created something so family organization, and that's Mario, first of all.
Yeah.
But Mario transcended to Sid.
Yeah. Mario grew up on Jock's second house in Villamard. I'm a LaSalle boy, and we used to go by the house all the time to see if Mario Lemieux was there, even in the offseason.
Special human being, too.
Mario Lemieux was absolutely amazing. What are you in ending? What are you doing to keep busy? I know you got different ventures, but from a hockey perspective, do you like doing analysis stuff like that or whatever?
Yeah, it's you know,
if I'm looking for a partner, start up a podcast en français. You watch a lot.
I do watch. I mean, I only had, you know, 20 days of TV this year. You know, so it's not full time; it's part time. But I obviously love watching hockey, and you know, my two oldest kids are in hockey. And I think, you know, we have to help our sport in some way in Quebec and everything, and make it grow. And
you coach? It's,
I coach my kid, yeah.
Yeah. Find that heart to coach your kid?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I coach the other kids because my kid doesn't want to.
When you coach your kids, there's either two ways it's going to go down.
Yeah.
Either you're going to be very hard on them, or you'll probably favor them. There's three ways it could go down, or you could really be fantastic and be really neutral. I coached my kids soccer when they were younger. I realized I got to stop doing this because I tried to show that there was no favoritism, and I was hard. And I was hard on 5 and 6 year old, my 5 year old, 6 year old sons. And I said, no, I can't do this. And that's it. After 1 or 2 years, it's over. Let somebody else coach them because I found I was.
Well, to me, it's. I coach for the other kids almost. And my son, as you know, if he wants to listen to me, he listens to me. But I feel like we have such a responsibility as Explorer too to be there because it's
for you.
It's the next, you know, generation. So
So
I love doing it. But the emotion gets in sometimes, but I learned with my kids that I coach the other kids, and if you want to hear my advice, you'll get them. But there's definitely not intensity or I'm very calm with all this. Yeah.
Okay. Before I let you go,
yes.
Predictions.
Yes.
Carolina versus the Islanders.
Carolina and seven.
So I was on with Larac and Gonzalez on BPM Sports earlier today, and they asked me for my predictions. And I said, because I don't have the courage to say the Islanders, because nobody will, I will say Carolina 7 games overtime. But I said, that's how much I believe the Islanders will push Carolina.
Oh.
They've been playing playoff games for a month and a half, the Islanders have.
Yes.
And those teams are dangerous, right?
And I had Patrick Roy coaching me in Colorado, and he had Varlamov in net. And I feel like it's kind of he had a Vezina career season. He didn't win the trophy, but he was nominated. So I feel that there's that kind of – he was so good that year. So if he's as good as he was and as good as he's been, the goalie could make a difference.
Boston, Toronto.
Boston. Boston in six.
I got Toronto. The only thing I don't like, I had Toronto all along. I didn't like Sheldon Keefe saying that Matthews 69 goals to hit 70 was a distraction. Maybe it was, but I don't think he should have said that.
I just defailed so many years that I feel that there's a mental aspect of it. Yeah, last year they did a little bit better, but I feel that failing after and after over, and it's tough for me. And Boston. last year they failed miserably after, you know, having the best season ever. So I think Boston will...
Carolyn Willette is here standing by. We're going to get to her, so we'll speed. We'll go through this pretty fast. Florida, Tampa.
Florida, but in six. It's going to be tough.
Rangers, Washington.
Rangers.
Winnipeg, Colorado.
Colorado.
Vancouver, Nashville.
Vancouver.
Dallas, Vegas.
Vegas.
Edmonton, LA.
Edmonton.
You know, I think we have a lot of the same picks, except for I got Toronto over Boston. I know they failed a lot, but they did beat Tampa Bay last year.
$2.
No problem. $2. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, $2. Thank you so much, hey, Max Talbot. I appreciate it. Eh?
Me too.
And we'll do an e-transfer. There you have it. We got $2. He's got Boston. I got Toronto. How are you?
Bonjour, Tony.
We bring her in, the great Carolyn Willette.
Bonjour, Tony.
Hall of Famer.
Thank you.
How does that feel? Like when you hear that, it's
so surreal.
Really?
Surreal. I might need a few more years to realize that.
Talk to me about the Hall of Fame, like the whole experience. You found out, you got the call. Was it Lanny McDonald or?
Yes, but strangely enough, it was the same day as I was receiving the Order of Quebec.
Wow.
So I was never able to answer my phone.
Oh my God.
Even though I had missed like five calls from the Hall of Fame. So I tried calling back, but it was an automated message from the Hall of Fame. So I never spoke to him. Then the ceremony started. So I actually found out online on TSM.
Oh my God. Isn't that something?
But it was really special because then everyone else that was there, my family, the nominees, the Premier of Quebec found out at the same time. So it's a day I'll never forget. And then just the ceremony at the Hall of Fame was really, really special just to be able to be inducted with someone like Pierre Turgeon and some of my childhood heroes. It was something I'll never forget.
I saw you last probably, I don't know, give or take 9 months ago, maybe at another event, at another gala, and you were being honored by Barry. Okay. And so your connection to Barry Lorenzetti, because I know that he is the president of the Carolyn Willette fan club, by the way. So talk to me about the mutual admiration and the respect that you have for Barry Lorenzetti and what's your connection and your connection to Barry and your connection to the Foundation Cup.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We met several years ago when I was the chair of the Player Association for Hockey Canada. And he just invited me to go grab lunch, and I met their man that's absolutely wonderful, that's so passionate for the growth of hockey for both girls and boys. And I feel throughout the years
he's really, really passionate about the women's game. Really passionate about the women's game.
Like just creating the BFL Coach of the Year. It's such a special program that gets to recognize of incredible women across the country, and then his help for the national women's team camps that we're able to hold because of his support. So he became a really great friend. He helped me with the nonprofit that I started in 2014 to help grow and develop girls hockey here in Quebec, and we went from around 50 teams to 114 last year, and the last 2 years our finals have been at the Bell Center. I wouldn't be able to do that without Barry and the BFL Canada. So it's for me to be here today, it's an absolute pleasure. I had a ton of fun, and it's incredible to see how much he gives back to the community he grew up in and how much he wants to empower women along the way.
I have to tell you, and I'm not going to lie to you, I'm very pleasantly surprised by the success of the PWHL in terms of ratings, in terms of numbers, in terms of attendance. Were you at all worried when the league kicked off that it wasn't going to be as accepted as it has and it wasn't going to have the same success that it's experiencing right now?
I think just like you said, I didn't expect that it would be this incredible because I've been part of several leagues where, you know, it was hard to get it off the ground. And to be honest, when I saw it launch and then I just saw the media attention around it, I started to believe that it would
There were indicators there that it was going to go
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And for example, for Julie and I, right from the start, we're like, we got to buy season tickets because we got to support the dream that we never had in our careers. And you know what I realized? So many players that I played with or against did that. So I go to games, and not only do I see players that I played with or against that have season tickets, but also fans that cheered us on with Montreal Les Canadiens back then and are still, like, we're waiting for this moment forever. So last night I was at the Verdun Auditorium, and I saw the team come back from the
4-3 win.
It was incredible. What a game.
Late in the game, yeah. Score going the power play, absolutely. Tying it up. Exactly. Yeah, I saw that.
I think it's just going to grow and continue to develop from here. I think the caliber is going to get better and better, because for the first time, these women can focus on solely being hockey athletes.
But as much as you're so happy and so proud, is there a part of you that is like, even though you had some great experiences and was it a gold four times, or I'm going off the top of my head here? Okay. Four Olympic golds. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure you would have wanted to be a part of this right now. What's going on with the PWHL? Oh. You had an amazing career. Yeah. You had so many great moments, but is there a part of you that says, man, the timing?
For sure. Like, I'm super envious of what they have, and I look at it and I'm super, super proud to witness all that success. But to be honest, I know that the women before me hit so hard, and I still love what I got to have in my career, my college experience, and then my experience with the CWHL, with Montreal Canadiens, where I won 4 Clarkson Cup with Marie-Philippe Poulin, and so many different, like Charlene Labonté, Kim St-Pierre. Incredible.
She just scored a couple of goals at the World Championships. Yeah. Did she not?
She was pretty amazing. And
Spooner's really good.
Oh, yeah. Spooner just had a baby, just came back.
She's a big-time goal scorer. Yeah, I think she's got 15 goals, if memory serves me well. So, tied with points with Marie-Philippe Poulin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But for me, Marie-Philippe Poulin is still the best player in the women's absolutely. Player in the world, eh?
Because of how she show up in important games, right?
So clutch.
Being exactly. And what people don't realize is how hard she works every day. Like, she's first in line. She goes all out to the point where she falls at times because she pushes her edge work all the time. Or every time she shoots, it's the best shot that she can take. So she's a huge inspiration to other, but she has been able to improve her game every year. And to see her have that success in the final was absolutely incredible and deserving, because she's earned that. She came back from a really tough injury, and we built her up back up to be better and better and better. And I wasn't worried. I knew that she was ready for that final game, and she showed why she's the best.
And if you want to see why she is the best, tomorrow at the Bell Center, Montreal versus Toronto, PWHL, in what they're saying is going to be the highest attendance for a women's hockey game ever.
Ever.
You got goosebumps?
I do, absolutely. And I can't wait to witness it.
So what we're going to see tomorrow, and the game's going to be televised and it's going to be on radio and everything, is that... For you, is that art going to be the standard going forward? Are you expecting now, after everything we know and where it's headed, are you expecting this kind of attendance, this kind of ratings, this kind of publicity going forward? You think they can maintain that?
Again, I never thought that in around 20 minutes we would set up the Bell Center with the Montreal team. So it's exceeded all my expectations. And, you know, just being part of that game yesterday, it was so exciting. You watch the final of the World Championship that just happened. So fun, so exciting. Back and forth, great hockey, physical, fast. Women don't take a shift off. They give their best every shift. So I think it's just going to continue to grow.
I love the game, but I have to I really love it at the Olympics.
Yes, absolutely.
At the Olympics, there's just so much on the line, and you feel it's really something. Yeah. Karen Ouellette, thank you so much for everything you've done for the game. Congratulations on an amazing career. I've told you that already several times. If you wanted to script a career, can't get better than Karen Ouellette. Merci beaucoup. J'apprécie. There you have it. Go back to your lunch.
Yeah,
took you away from lunch. Hopefully there's still some left. All right.
I'm sure.
All right. There you have it. Okay. Carolyn Ouellette. Marinero, it's a sick podcast. I talked to you about Energy Transportation Group, our proud partner and sponsor, as well as Labitte TV, another proud partner and sponsor. I also want to talk to you about Playground. You don't want to miss Night Fever live at Playground Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Dance the night away and experience the magic of the Bee Gees, music in a show that celebrates their timeless legacy. The show will take place under the Grand Marquis, a beautiful temporary structure that is perfect for electrifying events like this one. Playground, your entertainment destination. Visit playground.ca for details. I just want to let you know that former Montreal Canadian Sergio Momesso
is coming on. Sergio Momesso will join us in about a minute. Before he gets to us, join our NHL playoff bracket. The link is in the description. This is what it looks like, and you can find it everywhere on social media. Once again, you can find it on Twitter and Instagram as well. All right, so there you have it, our NHL playoff bracket. We gave our NHL predictions earlier on, and so if you join our bracket, of course, best of luck to you. Okay, we are waiting for Sergio Momesso, who should be joining us in about a minute. Shane Gaumont, if you can go get Sergio, please, I'd appreciate it. Yeah, Sergio is coming. All right, okay. All right, here he is. He's coming, I've been told. Is he here? He is not here. All right, okay. Okay, they're looking for him. All right, okay, not a problem, not a problem. In case you missed it, and you're joining us just now, Paul Byron joined us from the start of the podcast. Michel Bergeron joined us. Barry Lorenzetti. Max Talbot, Brittany Kennel, who sang the anthem earlier today at the Foundation Cup event and sings the anthem at the Bell Center, has a new CD coming out, and she's a country singer. And, of course, moments ago, it was Carolyn Ouellette. Once again, if you are joining us right now, the Foundation Cup is an event that was put together by Barry Lorenzetti and raising money for mental health and for autism with the Louis Morissette and Vero Foundation as well. And this took place earlier this morning. The hockey game started around 10 o'clock in the morning. And right now it's in the afternoon. It is not even 2:30 p.m. that we're doing this live from Da Vinci Restaurant on Bishop Street in downtown Montreal, where they're serving all of us a great lunch. Many former NHLers took part in the event today. Pascal Dupuis, Alexandre Daigle, Bruno Gervais, Francis Bouillon, Mathieu Dandeneau, Patrice Brisebois, Stéphane Quintal, Pierre-Marc Bouchard, and Sergio Momesso. Here he is.
How's it going, Tony?
Very well. Sergio and I worked together for the same radio station for a very, very long time. So there's a lot of respect there, at least that I have for Sergio. I can tell you that. He also had a chance to work several games for TSN television in the past year. Hopefully many more going forward. Sergio, awesome event today. And I have to tell you that you were on the winning side, and the team that was on the losing side, they thought that there wasn't always some fair play, that you guys were double shifting some of your best players and you had the pedal to the metal the entire time. You want to comment on that? Or?
Well, that was definitely, we had three centers. So we had, listen to this, we had Paul Byron, Pascal Dupuis, and Alexandre Daigle.
Yeah.
And we had four lines. So our centers were going every three times. I was a left winger, so I had nothing to do with this. And those guys were on the ice all the time, like every three shifts. And so we're definitely stronger at that position. So, you know, they were flying. I mean, listen, they're not that old. We're almost in our 60s, and these guys are in their mid to early 40s. So it makes a difference. So, yeah, we did have the stronger team. There's no question. But I think in the end, everyone's downstairs now here at the restaurant. They're having a good time.
Yeah.
They're eating well. They're having some nice wine, so
good stuff.
Everyone's good. Everyone's good.
Sergio, yeah. Everyone loves listening to you talk about the Montreal Canadiens because, of course, you've been doing it for many, many years as a former voice or a color man on Montreal Canadiens broadcast on radio. And once again, you had a chance to do several games this year on television. You know, he's not the first person that people want to talk to you about when they talk about Canadiens, but I was watching you earlier today at the Bell Center, and Sergio Momesso was a big, strong winger with a lot of physical and athletic attributes when he played. And today, I think of Josh Anderson, who's big and he's strong, but he hasn't been able to put it together. Here's a guy with a 27-goal season with Columbus, give or take about 4 years ago, I believe. And with the Canadiens, you see flashes, but more often than not, you see a ton of inconsistency. As a guy who was a big, strong player, a winger as well, do you see some of the challenges he has or where you think he's going wrong? And do you have some advice that you think you can give that could probably help a guy like that?
You know, it's strange. You know, I was watching him, and I love Josh Anderson because that's, you know, a power forward, like you mentioned. And And when you saw him when they were in the playoffs, I know it was during COVID time, but he is tenacious. He can go up and down and really make life hard for opposing defensemen. I think he got away from his style of game where pretty much is, you know, up and down, simple.
North-south.
Physical. And just play that way. And I think when Josh gets out of sorts is when he tries to do too much. And I'll never forget, I mean, I played in different positions, different, let's say, first line or third line. I went to St. Louis and I was, you know, when you play in a third line, it's pretty simple. You know, you go up and down, north-south, you get the puck in deep and you forecheck and that's the way you play. Then I ended up playing with Brett Hull and Adam Oates. And for the first couple of games, you start to play their style of game. Let's say you're playing with Suzuki and Caulfield. So they like to dangle. They like to cross the blue line. They like to make passes. And it's not always north-south. It's hold the puck, get in the zone, wait for the late guy, and stuff like that. And I think, you know, like I got lost sometimes playing that type of game. And I found it hard because they don't play the same type of style. And you have to adapt. But at the end of the day, you can't change your game. You're on that line to give them some space and some room. You can't change. As soon as they cross the line, you still got to drive the net. You got to be the guy in the corner. You got to be the guy in front of the net and let them do all that type of work.
Armia was really good in the last 3 months, eh?
Absolutely. He was really good. And so you saw them with Newhook and I believe it was Gallagher. I'm not exactly sure.
And the hope is,
yeah,
is that Anderson will have an Armia bounce back kind of year next year. Right.
That's obviously the with the contract that he has, it's not an easy contract to move. I think he's a very good guy and well respected. He's a guy to me that you have to give him the puck when he crosses the blue line at that point. If he doesn't get it at that time, if he's handling the puck too much, it's not a good thing.
But Sergio, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
He's also the type of guy that if you get him that puck in that situation, he has to put that head down
and
put that
drive the net out
and drive the
he net. Has to drive the net. If he doesn't score, it doesn't matter. Maybe somebody else will score after that, creating the space and the room going to the front of the net. So I think he got into a space at the end where he was just trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And it's not his style.
Sergio, it's always a treat. I won't take up too much of your time.
No, it's no problem. It's no problem. First of all, I'd like to say congrats on your podcast.
Thank you.
And Sergio, also working on TBR. Good stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that,
yeah,
Sergio.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, the greatest story in the Canadians this year, I'll keep you for two more questions, okay?
Slavkovsky, yeah.
For me, the greatest story is Slavkovsky.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to ask you about him,
okay,
because it's the greatest story, but I want to ask you for the greatest story of the Montreal Canadiens this year, not named Juraj Slavkovsky, is who in your opinion? Or is what? And it could be a coach. Could be a special teams. Could be a player.
Well, obviously I like them. The story of Mike Matheson, I think he's evolved to be that number one defenseman, carrying the puck up the play. I think he's had a great season.
If I could cut you off for 1 second, sure. It's funny because I had Michel Bergeron about 45 minutes ago. You know what he said? Because I'm sick and tired of everyone talking about Matheson being a minus 25 or 26. He goes, he's on the ice when they trail by a goal and they pull the goalie. So he ends up being a minus 12 in that situation if the other team scores an empty net goal against them. And he says, his plus minus stats are not all that bad, you know. And when you think about it, I think Matheson's a great story. He's over 60 points.
Absolutely. And he definitely adds to the offense that they want. And we saw this year the Canadians were, I'm not exactly sure, were they second or third overall in the league for defenseman scoring? So I think they're good on that department where their defense have added to their offense. And as we know, here we're at the point where, and I think obviously Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton know, this is like, we got to take the next step now. People have watched this team for the last 3 years. Okay, now we want to make the playoffs. Can we get there next year? Everyone's kind of been patient in Montreal. I've talked to friends that are season ticket holders and stuff. Okay, the defense are there. Now we need some offense. This is where we need to see. They got all their draft picks. They got all their money in order. And Kent Hughes admitted it after the year. This is where we got to make the next step. And I hope that they do. And I think they will. They're smart enough. They understand. We need some forwards now that we can score some goals and get secondary scoring. If Kirby Dach can be, you know, healthy, that would definitely help a lot because that first line can't do it all alone. As we know, the secondary scoring, we got some from Newhook. Listen, let's face it. Newhook, Armia, and I believe Gallagher. That's a good third line.
Yes.
They need a second line scoring to help these guys get to that next level.
You think Joshua Roy has the ability and potential to probably be that guy one day?
I think so. I'm not saying next year, but I think he can. I like the way when he was in there, he has the smarts. He's got skill. Yeah. You can see that. And I hope. So we know Nick Suzuki and Caulfield, they're the number one guys. And Slavkovsky's on that line. For a 20-year-old, he's fit in. But they need a second line scoring. There's no question. They need some depth at forward position. And if they get that, you know, they can get those 10, 12 extra points where they can be in the playoffs.
Last one for you. Does the word untouchable in hockey or in sports, does it exist for you? Or do you think anyone's untouchable? Well,
Wayne Gretzky was untouchable, but he got traded.
Yeah, you're
so
right.
So what are you talking about?
I'm talking about, like, have you put that label on any Montreal Canadian player? Is there a player for you that's an untouchable? Like, I would put Suzuki as an untouchable right now, and I would put Slavkovsky as an untouchable. Would you put them as an untouchable?
I think that whole line with Caulfield, I mean, they signed these.
The whole line's untouchable
for them. I mean, this is their future.
Yeah.
This is their future, so they want to build around those guys. So I think that line is untouchable. I do. And then they got to build around those guys to help them not just feel all the pressure that they have to be. They have to score every night. There's nights where they won't because they're matched up against the top lines against the other league, the top defensive pairings and stuff. So they need some help. There's no question. I think that's where they need to focus on. I like Montembeau. I like Primo at the end of the year in general. I think you know, they had to go that way on as the goaltending.
It worked out.
So they need some depth on forward, and we all can agree on that. And I think that they got, if Kirby Dach gets back healthy and he has some help on the wings where they can get some goals for that on that second line, you know, then that can get them to the playoffs next year. So hopefully that'll be the case, because everybody in Montreal wants to see us keep going forward in that progression. I think people have been patient in Montreal for the most part.
It's been well accepted, eh?
I think it's been pretty much accepted.
3 years in a row, you would think that
I think
some people would have gone nuts by now, but it's been pretty good.
No, it's been pretty good.
They have a lot of confidence in the management team, the coaching staff, the people behind it.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, too. And for me, too, I want to see them in the playoffs. I want to see them get there. It's nice to watch the first round that's coming up on the weekend, but it's other teams.
Oh, that I could do.
Yeah,
I said it was the last question.
Okay.
Who do you think is going to the Stanley Cup final? This will really be the last question.
Wow. Well,
I think this is the toughest year of all of them.
I'm going to start with the West. And it's funny because I'm hoping, I think Dallas is going to be tough to handle out in the West.
Yeah.
I'll have to say Dallas in the West. I'm telling you, in the East, it's a flip of a coin. I really don't know how Boston's going to do.
You think your buddy Patrick Roy could pull off the upset?
No, I don't think he has the horses to go. Maybe.
He's going to push them, though.
He's going to push them, but I don't think he has the scoring to go further. The Rangers are fun to watch. I like that team. Tampa could be like a wild card. The way they've played of late, I think the East is wide open. I really do. There's so many good teams in the
East. Can't take penalties versus Tampa. Their power play is really good.
It'd be fun to watch. I'm really looking forward to watch the first round. There's no question about it.
I said, I hope McDavid wins the cup. I'm for great players winning the Stanley Cup, because if they don't, then there's, you know, why he wasn't able to lead his team to a cup. I don't want to hear
that. But at the end of the day, him, like McDavid and Draisaitl, they just can't do everything.
Yeah, you're right.
They can score.
Not everyone sees it like that, right?
Can get four goals, but if they give up five, at the end of the day, you know, their goaltending has to come up. Just like Colorado, I know that they've had some trouble on goaltending. Listen, I'm hoping for Vancouver. As an ex-Canuck.
Of course.
I'm hoping for Winnipeg. Like to see a Canadian
team. It's the best chance that Canada, bringing the cup back to Canada, this is probably the best chance.
I really like Winnipeg, you know. Like, it'll be interesting to see the Jets there on that one. So, it's always fun to watch the playoffs.
Sergio, thanks for coming by.
You're welcome.
I love this guy. Sergio Momesso. Worked together for a long time. He's a good friend. He's a good man. All right. Thanks so much. It's a Sick Podcast. He's Sergio Momesso. I'm Marinaro. Special thanks to our partners, Energy Transportation Group. Thank you very much. Labitta TV. Thank you very much. Playground. Thank you very much. Thank you to Barry Lorenzetti for having us here. Of course, the Barry F. Lorenzetti Foundation. It was the Foundation Cup that took place earlier today. Raised $150,000 towards Louis Morissette and Vero autism. And of course, towards mental health. What a great day. What an event. And I hope you all enjoyed watching it tonight. Merci beaucoup. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group, driven to be different. La Vida TV, embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.